It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
I've always believed that we were put here for a reason. That there is a path, somehow a divine plan for all of us, for each one of us. And I've also always believed that America was set apart in a special way, that it was put here between the oceans to be found by a certain kind of people based on a quality that these people had, but that they came from every corner of the world. And a country then was created by men and women who came not for gold, but mainly in search of God. They would be free people, living under the law with faith in their Maker and in their future. It's been written that the most sublime figure in American history was George Washington, on his knees in the snow at Valley Forge. He personified a people who knew that it was not enough to depend on their own courage and goodness, that they must also seek help from God, their Father and Preserver.
If you ever wondered why many of us admire the 40th President of the United States, Ronald Reagan, that should give you an idea. And for some of you, it was before you were born, and for some of you, it's barely mentioned in the textbooks. And so we need to lay the groundwork. This was the essence of the man who was the president. It was remarkable, even at that time, we hadn't had a president in a very long time who had been so outspoken about who God was and who had an understanding of the world and of our place in this world in as it related to a master plan of God himself. Well, there's a new book that talks about that deep faith and how it sort of folded into fighting the Cold War and finally bringing down communism. But Ronald Reagan had a partner in this, and that was a long-ago pope familiar to many of you that are Catholics. He certainly was my favorite in my lifetime, John Paul II. The book is called A Pope and a President, John Paul II, Ronald Reagan, and the Extraordinary Untold Story of the 20th Century. And one of my favorite authors and professors, honestly, each time I interview him, it's always my personal pleasure, and I just hope the rest of you enjoy it as much as I do, is Paul Kinger. Paul is a New York Times bestselling author. He's also a professor of political science at Grove City College. He's also their director of the Center for Vision and Values, but he's written so many books. He's the author of God and Ronald Reagan, The Crusader, Ronald Reagan and the Fall of Communism, 11 Principles of the Reagan Conservatives, and many, many are dupes and the communists. But Paul, first of all, good morning, and thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much, Sandy. That introduction was very kind. Thank you.
You know, as I look at the titles of your books, and I realize I've interviewed you on most of those, I guess it never really hit me how many of your books were Ronald Reagan-centric. And so the question, before we get into this particular subject matter, is why in the world did you find yourself writing about Ronald Reagan so much and spending so much of your own life, really, reading things that have made you expert on his time and his life?
Well, that's a good question. You know, Bill Clark and Reagan called it the DP, the Divine Plan. And I became, Bill Clark was Reagan's closest advisor, and I became Clark's biographer. And, you know, Clark, I became close to Clark because the first book I did in all of these was a book called God and Ronald Reagan, which came out in 2004. And I had various people tell me, they said, and in fact, this was Floyd Brown who told me this. He was the first executive director of the Reagan Ranch Center. He said, listen, Bill Clark is the most important member of the Reagan administration. He's the guy that took down the Soviets. He's the only one who hasn't done a memoir that needs to. he needs a biography done, and I think you're the only person who could convince him to let you write his biography, because he's too humble to write memoirs. And so I did. I asked Clark. I became his biographer. Stepping back further, I guess the deeper answer to your question, Sandy, is that I was in college in the end of the 1980s with the collapse of communism, and my liberal professors all told me that, you know, Reagan was an idiot for predicting that communism was going to end up in the ash heap of history. And then I watched it all happen, and then all of a sudden they said, Reagan had nothing to do with any of that. So all of a sudden, yeah, it was just crazy. So I started investigating that. I ended up going to graduate school at American University in Washington, and I started being a Cold War historian. God and Ronald Reagan was the first big book, I guess, that came out in 2004. And then to get to how this connects to this book, A Pope and a President, I was sitting with Bill Clark in his living room one day at his ranch in California, and we were just doing the conversations, the interviews for what became my biography of him. My family was with me. I mean, we spent like 3 summers at Clark's ranch. He became like a grandfather to me. And then one day, Sandy, I said to Bill Clark, this was probably like 2 years into, I don't know, this is probably our 1,000th conversation. and I said, Bill, you know, of all things, this just hit me. I don't think I ever asked you what you and Ronald Reagan thought about the shooting of the Pope. And he said, well, Paul. And then what he proceeded to tell me, Sandy, I was so engrossed, I didn't even hit the button on my handheld recorder. And he just basically told me that he and Reagan and Bill Casey and all of these guys, that they had thought from the very beginning that the Soviets had ordered the hit on the Pope, or at least they suspected it. And I was just blown away by what he proceeded to tell me. And that was just sort of many kind of, you know, unexpected stops along the road that led me to write this particular book on Reagan.
Well, then let me just say as a teaser, and we'll get to some of it, but you have a lot of things in this book that no one's ever read before. You really have some fascinating information. And I also want to give you Michael Reagan, of course, the son of Ronald Reagan, has written about you. No Reagan biographer or scholar knows Ronald Reagan and conservatism like Paul Kinger. And there are some things in this book that Paul has revealed that no one has ever written about. So we're going to get into that. Paul, because I did sort of give a little mini description of Ronald Reagan. He was older, by 7 years or something like that, than Pope John Paul. But I don't think, you know, probably not many people listening, because we know how history's going in colleges and universities and high schools and grade schools now, really know much about John Paul II. So can you kind of just give us a little bio here of who he was before we get into the intersection of their lives?
Yeah, sure. I mean, if there was, you know, let's say a half a dozen kind of key figures in the collapse of communism, and, you know, here I'll say, I think even liberals would come up with this sort of shared list. You know, they'd probably, you know, some of them reluctantly, but some of them not so reluctantly will include Reagan. I've been really pleased to see that, Sandy. I really have. You know, they have other things about Reagan they don't like, but I think there's a general consensus that Reagan had to do with ending the Cold War. Gorbachev, most people would put in that list. You know, some conservatives reluctantly, liberals enthusiastically. You know, Margaret Thatcher usually falls in there, Lech Walesa, Vaclav Havel. But really, John Paul II is pretty much on everybody's list. And, you know, I think he's right up there with Reagan and Thatcher and Gorbachev. And I really put him in the top two with Reagan. And, you know, just to back up on, you know, when this moment happened, it was October 16th, 1978, that the College of Cardinals in Rome, they got together. They had just picked a pope about a month before that who called himself John Paul, and it was pope for 33 days, right? Imagine that number, 33. And it's fascinating. I mean, he picked the name John Paul, which was from John the 23rd and Pope Paul the 6th, the previous two popes. It was a kind of very, warm thing to do for him to pick both names. And this is amazing. There's eyewitness testimony to this. He was asked at the time, they said, he referred to himself as John Paul I. And one of his closest aides said, well, you can't be John Paul I until a John Paul II follows. And he says, he will come soon enough. And he said, in fact, he was already there in front of me in the conclave. And he gestured to this Polish cardinal named Karol Wojtyła. And what's so chilling about that is there had never been a Polish pope. There had never been a Slavic pope. There had been nothing but Italian popes for 455 years. So right smack in the middle of the Cold War, this group of men in Rome, about 120 cardinals, they pluck out of the heart of the Soviet Empire, out of Poland, the most religious country in the Soviet Empire, where the war on religion failed, they plucked this Polish pope. Ronald Reagan was floored by that. Reagan loved it. And then what Reagan really loved, and we've got eyewitness testimony to Reagan's reaction to this, it was June 1979. This Polish pope had picked for his first foreign visit Poland. And, you know, Leonid Brezhnev, Yuri Andropov, and the Soviet Union, they tried to stop this. And I admire this story, Sandy, with both Karol Wojtyła and Reagan, their courage. Karol Wojtyła said, no, I'm going to Poland. You're not going to stop me. I'm going to my native country. And they tried, but they couldn't stop him. They got there. His first homily was in Victory Square in Krakow, which is profound, Victory Square. And outdoor masses of like 5 million people. And Richard V. Allen, who was Reagan's national security advisor at the time, told me about this. He and Reagan were sitting at Reagan's home in California. They were watching footage on the evening news of the Pope's appearance in Poland. And they saw these crowds of millions. And Allen told me, he said, I looked over, there were tears in Reagan's eyes. And he said, that's it, that's it, that's it. The Pope is the key. He said, Dick, we've got to get elected. We've got to reach out to this Polish Pope and the Vatican and make them an ally. Because Reagan saw then and there, by the way, as the Soviets understood too, that this Pope had the potential, the power to collapse the entire Soviet bloc. And that's why Reagan said, ironically, here's one thing where Reagan and the Kremlin agreed, right? And so Reagan said, that's why we need to reach out to him and make him an ally. And that's why Yuri Andropov and the KGB and the Kremlin said, we need to reach out to him with a gun and put a bullet in his chest.
Wow. Paul, I want to take a little detour again, because I loved this quote that you include in your introduction to your book. Because the Poles, you know, even now are the standout, the people with guts and courage within the old Soviet bloc, now fighting the European Union internationalists, you know, they are the people with all the courage. And so Lech Walesa, whose name is familiar to you and me, but not to many people, was a hero of the Polish resistance movement against the communists. And I want to read his quote that you have here. If you choose the example of what we Poles have in our pockets and in our shops, communism has done very little for us. But if you choose the example of what is in our souls, I answer that communism has done very much for us. In fact, our souls contain exactly the opposite of what they wanted. They wanted us not to believe in God, and our churches are full. And so it's out of that kind of faith that's kind of the part of the Polish DNA that John Paul came and fighting, growing up in communism, and then he becomes the Pope. So it's just amazing. So you start your book with kind of the seminal event, this thing that happens to John Paul that really affects Ronald Reagan, and we're going to come back to that. But we're already through the first segment. We never have enough time to talk, Paul. I've just been with you for the first segment. I'm already running out of time.
And when we get back, let me add something to that Lech Walesa statement, if I could.
Okay, very good. All right, the book is called A Pope and a President, and our guest is Dr. Paul Kinger. And this is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
But in this, the very month of your visit, we in the United States will be celebrating the 200th anniversary of our Constitution. That document says a great deal about the fundamental values in which we Americans believe. In the words of the distinguished Catholic philosopher Jacques Maritain, the founding fathers were neither metaphysicians nor theologians, but their philosophy of life and their political philosophy, their notion of natural law and of human rights, were permeated with concepts worked out by Christian reason and backed up by an unshakable religious feeling. From the first then, our nation embraced the belief that the individual is sacred, and that as God himself respects human liberty, so too must the state. In freedom, we Americans have in these 200 years built a great country, a country of goodness and abundance. Indeed, Your Holiness, it is precisely because we believe in freedom, because we respect the liberty of the individual in the economic as well as the political sphere, that we have achieved such prosperity.
All right, that was again the voice of Ronald Reagan, but he's welcoming John Paul II to the United States in celebration
stuff.
Of the... Pardon?
That's great stuff. It's really great to hear that. I have it in the book, but I don't really hear it, right? Like when I read the quotes, I don't usually get to hear the audio. So this is a real treat, you playing that back for me so I could hear that.
It really is wonderful to go back in time and to reflect, especially on great moments. Again, my guest is Paul Kinger. That's his voice you're hearing, and he's the author of this book, A Pope and a President. Paul, before we took the break, I read a quote that you provided from Lech Walesa, who was one of the Polish resistors. He was a great man who had a ton of courage in the middle of the Soviet Union fighting back against the communists, and he basically said that the Soviets, the Russians, the communism had done a lot of good things for the Polish people, but it had to do with their faith. It had driven them deeper into faith and filled their churches. And you wanted to add something to that.
Yeah, and you're so right with Lech Walesa and the courage of the Poles and Karol Wojtyla, the Polish Pope. I mean, what you said about the Poles to this day. I mean, Poland and Italy, are the only two countries in all of Europe that haven't legalized same-sex marriage. I think the Italians now have same-sex, I think they have civil unions, but they haven't done marriage. The Poles haven't done gay marriage. I don't think they've legalized abortion either. I'm not sure about that, but they're solid. They remain solid, and Lech Walesa is still alive. Of that group I named earlier of key figures in the end of communism, I think only Walesa and Gorbachev are alive. But he said, Walesa said that when John Paul II came there in June 1979, he said he comes to Poland, and the 20 people who were following me in the Solidarity movement were suddenly 10 million. He said it was a greater. He said it was a greater multiplication than the loaves and the fishes. Which is, but it's true. And Ronald Reagan saw that as well. And then also to connect this to Ronald Reagan, Lech Walesa, when Reagan was elected November 4th, 1980, he won 44 out of 50 states against an incumbent. Took the Electoral College 489 to 49 against Jimmy Carter. And Lech Walesa was interviewed in Poland by the communist media. And he stood there and he boldly said to them, he said, "I envision what would happen in your election." He said, "Ronald Reagan is going to settle things. He's going to make things better." And that was the kind of thing that could get you thrown in jail. And actually did get Lech Walesa thrown in jail. And the Soviets actually, the same person who would shoot John Paul II, tried to literally blow up and assassinate Lech Walesa when he was in Rome visiting the Polish Pope on the day that would have been Ronald Reagan's inauguration, January 20th, 1981. Mm. So yeah, courage is just such a key part of this. Mm. The clip you just played from 1987, Reagan in Miami in front of John Paul II, you see there, Sandy, what kindred souls they were, how they thought alike about freedom, faith, the sanctity and dignity of human life. And I think to a few years after that, when John Paul II stood on a similar platform, I think this was in St. Louis, with the Clintons, And he was giving a statement like that, and Hillary and Bill were just getting red in the face as he was talking about the sanctity and dignity of human life. Mm-hmm. But here you had with Reagan and John Paul II, two guys who were really kindred spirits, you know, kindred souls. One of them's obviously Catholic, the other wasn't, but they just agreed on so much, including this common view of how to take on this common enemy of atheistic Soviet communism.
You know, let me drop in that abortion is still illegal in Poland, except in the case of rape.
Wow.
And so that's pretty amazing. That's pretty astounding, actually. But
the rest of the European Union harasses them about it.
Yeah.
And about their position on marriage as well. And even while, this current pope went and lectured Poland on letting in more Muslim immigrants. And Poland's like, look, I'm sorry, we're very faithful. The Prime Minister of Poland is a devout Catholic. He's like, but, we don't want our country to turn into France and England. They stand up to the rest of the European Union and the international community.
Yes, and how ironic, I'm going to skip ahead here without meaning to, but as I was reading the account of the shooting of the Pope, which we haven't gotten to yet, I did not know, honestly, Paul, who had the radar then to really recognize who the characters were, but it looked like, I don't know if they were Muslim, but it probably, if they were Turks, and they probably were Muslim, who shot the John Paul II, and I think that's ironic. But let's go back, because you point this incredible nexus between Reagan and John Paul II that I just never thought about, and that was it was an attempted assassination. They were both shot within 6 weeks of each other.
Yeah, that's right. Everybody forgets the proximity of that, Sandy. I mean, people who lived through it, like you and I, we remember Reagan being shot, remember John Paul II being shot, and I think a lot of younger people today who know a little bit about history may have heard that they were both shot. But what everybody forgets is it was just 6 weeks apart. With Reagan, it was March 30th, 1981. John Hinckley was the shooter. And, I mean, this was just, as Reagan put it, a confused young man, not part of any international conspiracy. He was just trying to get the attention of Jodie Foster. I mean, that's it. This, as Reagan called him, mixed-up young man, just trying to get this teen crush of his, this actress's attention. But then 6 weeks later, May 13th, 1981, John Paul II was shot just 6 weeks later, and the shooter was indeed a Muslim, a Turk. His name was Mehmet Ali Asha, and Asha shot him right smack in the middle of St. Peter's Square. I mean, just imagine the drama, ladies and gentlemen, right? I mean, the Pope is riding around St. Peter's Square in the Pope Mobile. He's preparing for his Wednesday audience. And Sandy, you'll appreciate this. This is not very well known, including even among the most devout Catholics who are John Paul II watchers. His homily that day, he was going to announce his new Institute on the Marriage and Family, which for the Vatican has been the group that is standing against abortion, same-sex marriage, transgenderism, all of that stuff. So he was going to announce that. The shooting stopped his announcement. Now, because he survived, he would be able to go on and announce it, but it almost stopped that, too. So he's riding through in his Pope Mobile, and this was a little after 5 o'clock. Asha had been dropped off there earlier in the day. He had an accomplice, a fellow, a Bulgarian by the name of Oral Celik, a Turk named Oral Celik, fellow Turk. And Celik was on the other side of the square. He was holding a panic bomb that he was going to detonate as soon as Asha started shooting. So the panic bomb would divert the crowd's attention and help scatter the crowd. So Asha had a 9mm semi-automatic Browning handgun. He lifted it up in the air, and he fired 4 shots at the Pope. And he hit him twice, one in the hand, one in the abdomen. He went down immediately. They rushed him to the hospital, the nearest hospital. He got there, and before he passed out, his very last words that he said to the nurse was, where he whispered to her, "How could they do it? How could they do it?" Which is an amazing thing to say, Sandy, because You know, Reagan, when he was shot, he knew right away it was a single shooter, a mixed-up young man. In fact, Reagan said in his diary, as I lay there before on the operating table before I pass out, I prayed for forgiveness for the mixed-up young man who shot me. Mm-hmm. But the Pope, even though he knew there was only one shooter pointing that gun at him, he somehow fingered a they in this. Mm. He sensed from the very beginning that there was more than one hand behind that shooter. And Reagan, too, suspected, as did Bill Clark, as did Bill Casey at the CIA. They kept this to themselves, but they, too, pretty much from the very beginning, suspected that there was more than just Asha behind the shooting of the Pope.
And as you uncover in your book, there really was. And as you say, nobody knew for years. And probably as a result of your book or just learning, I know they are, just learning new information on this. So in a word, Paul, what did you find out? What was behind that?
Well, I learned, and the Italians had figured this out too, that it was the Soviets that ordered the shooting. And specifically, it was Soviet military intelligence, the GRU, that ordered and organized the hit. And they did it working with the Bulgarians. Asha was hired by them to do it. And they did it with the knowledge, the go-ahead, and the blessing of Yuri Andropov, the head of the KGB. And the Italians started to figure that out. They released a report about 10 years ago. What I found, Sandy, that's completely new, and one of the things that really compelled me, I knew I had to write this book, is that our CIA did its own super secret, super tight internal investigation led by Casey. I was told that two women did this report, one in her late 20s, early 30s, the other in her early 40s. And these women were superb. They ran circles around the establishmentarians and the deniers in the CIA bureaucracy, who couldn't imagine that Moscow would have been behind this. And I was told that Casey, in this report, which finished around April, May 1985, they concluded that the GRU did it, that Andropov knew about it, Casey briefed Reagan on it, they never went public with it, and Casey's own son-in-law told me Casey went to Rome, briefed the Holy Father on this, John Paul II, and John Paul II said, you know, I figured this as much. I mean, he knew this in 1981. And he asked of Casey and presumably Reagan as well, listen, just sit on this information. Everyone pretty much knows that the Soviets did it. Things are getting better now. What's done is done. I don't want to launch World War III over this. These guys are evil. This is what they do. This is standard operating procedure. Let's move on. Over time, all of it will come out. And over time, it has come out.
Yeah. And so you talk about how Reagan, meanwhile, is watching this, and they had not met yet, as far as I understand. Reagan was pretty new in office when he was shot himself. He nearly died, and, of course, that wasn't reported at the time. His condition was so serious. And the Pope as well, you write that he was in surgery, I believe, 5 hours. It was a very serious attempted assassination, but he survived, so did Reagan. Meanwhile, Reagan is watching this with fascination and admiration for this Pope. But eventually, Paul, they meet and actually talk about this assassination and how it figures into their view of their role in this world. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I think that's maybe the most touching aspect of this. They both should have bled to death. They both should have died. And amazingly, it was initially reported they weren't even hit. I remember that. It was just amazing. Yeah. And in fact, Reagan was bleeding to death, and John Paul II was bleeding to death. And it was said that if the driver hadn't gotten to George Washington University Hospital quick enough, Reagan probably would have bled to death in the back of the car or before they started surgery. And Father Zhivich, who was the closest aide to John Paul II, who caught him after he was shot, he immediately fell into Zhivich's arms. He said, one more traffic obstruction in Rome, and we wouldn't have made it. Reagan needed 8 pints of blood transfused into him. John Paul II needed 6. He was given last rites. And in fact, the first transfusion didn't take. The doctors there in the OR immediately opened their arms and donated their blood to give him blood. And so when these two got together at the Vatican for the first time, June 7th, 1982, Reagan had been trying to meet with the Pope since February of 81. I mean, he wanted to meet with him right away. So they finally got together, and Reagan said to him, look how the evil forces were put in our way and how Providence intervened. And they both believed, they were both convinced, that God had spared their lives for a special purpose, which they believed was to come together, to work together, to take down Soviet communism. And imagine, Sandy, the non-Polish president saying to the Polish Pope, Holy Father, hope remains, and it remains in Poland. That could be the dagger to the heart of the Soviet Empire, and the Polish Pope saying, yes, it could.
Wow. Well, that's just, that gives me chills, honestly. It just gives me chills, Paul. I guess it's just the work of God, and I feel it. It just comes to the airwaves, just this story of God's work in this world. It's just, it's great to have you reveal this to us. It's called A Pope and a President. There's a lot more to say, of course, because the Soviet Union did fall as a result of their leadership, and so we're going to talk about that when we return. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I heard a young father, a very prominent young man in the entertainment world, addressing a tremendous gathering in California. It was during the time of the Cold War. And communism and our own way of life were very much on people's minds, and he was speaking to that subject. And suddenly, though, I heard him saying, I love my little girls more than anything, and I said to myself, oh no, don't, you can't, don't say that. But I had underestimated him. He went on, I would rather see my little girls die now, still believing in God, than have them grow up under communism and one day die no longer believing in God.
All right, that was Ronald Reagan. And it's kind of, for those of us that grew up with communism, understanding it, studying it in schools, knowing the history, knowing the murder, the brutality, that resonates. But for so many people hearing that right now, talking about communism has, up until a few years ago, made you silly, irrelevant. Probably, Paul Kinger, you know a lot about that because you've written about communism so much. Have you ever been sort of derided by your fellow professors because of your focus on the evils of communism?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, Sandy, I often say it's not so much that these leftist professors are pro-communist as much as they're anti-communists. They think that the anti-communists are Neanderthals, right? And you run into that again and again. So they're more appalled at Joe McCarthy than they are Joe Stalin. And in fact, that passage you just played, that was Reagan's Evil Empire speech, National Association of Evangelicals, March 1983. And the young father, the young actor that Reagan was talking about there was Pat Boone. Oh. And when that happened at the time, the New Republic and some of the liberal publications were like, oh, do you believe that? What a barbarian would rather have his daughter die than... But what Reagan is saying there that a secular liberal can't understand is that to Reagan, you know, and here too is something he understood with John Paul II, the soul is eternal. And if the communists and the atheists are trying to deny you God and they're trying to deny you eternal life, well, there's no greater sin than that. You're gonna live forever. You don't want to live forever in hell. This life is about making it to the next life and making it to heaven. So, you know, for Reagan, it was the soul that was eternal. So the people in that audience, those evangelicals in the audience, noticed that they clapped because they understood. Secular people, though, just groan because to them that sounds cruel, and it's because they don't really understand the Christian faith.
Paul, communism has been described as the greatest evil of the 20th century. I think for some, that's just beyond the realm of their understanding. So because you are an expert, can you make that case?
Yeah, well, it's responsible for the deaths of a minimum of 100 million people. You know, the Black Book of Communism, the Harvard University Press book, uses that number. It's really, though, Stanley, closer to 140 million. But, you know, either way, 100 million to 140 million, that's double the combined death tolls of World War One and World War Two. I mean, you just can't find diseases that kill that many people. I mean, Ronald Reagan called it a disease. He called it a form of madness. The influenza epidemic after World War One killed about a fifth or a sixth of that many people. So that's why Reagan called it an evil empire. And by the way, back to the point of the shooting of the Pope, it's why I've had a lot of talk show hosts in the course of interviewing me on this book, Sandy. They've said, Professor Kengler, I just don't get it, though. I don't see why the Soviets would shoot a Pope. And I said, because they were evil. They represented an evil ideology. I mean, they had been killing nuns and bishops and Russian Orthodox priests and Roman Catholic priests and Lutherans and Methodists and in Cambodia, Buddhists and China. I mean, countless religious people they murdered for a century. So when Ronald Reagan and Bill Casey and Bill Clark first heard that Alyosha was working maybe for the Bulgarians, they're like, oh, well, the Soviets did it. If he was working for the Bulgarians, I mean, Bulgaria is like the 16th Soviet Republic. And you know, other people sitting around the table at the CIA saying to Casey, oh, I don't know, Moscow would never do something like that, would they? Casey's like, are you out of your mind? Of course they would shoot a pope. I mean, if they could have gotten Pope Pius XII, if Stalin could have gotten a noose around his neck, he would have hung him from the roof of the Sistine Chapel.
You actually.
So it was just a matter of doing what they could. This was a really evil, pernicious ideology.
Yes, and you actually tell a story that I'd never heard before. Not that I've heard them all, but when the when Russia caved to communism before the Soviet Union became what it was before they conquered all the people they conquered in the beginning of the revolution, you describe a situation in a courtroom where they put a priest on trial and other priests and other Christians, and I think it's just a very graphic illustration of the center of the focus of the hatred, you know. And honestly, without getting off that subject, nothing has changed, has it, Paul? I mean, the center
of that was the Moscow church trials. It was unbelievable. I mean, it's agonizing and depressing, some of the research that I have to do going through and reading. But I mean, they killed, just thousands and thousands of religious people in the worst ways. And this audience will appreciate this. A lot of times in this book, I cite the book Tortured for Christ by Richard Wurmbrand, who was the late pastor in the Romanian prison system. I mean, he talked about watching Christians in one Romanian prison being literally crucified, put up on crosses. He talked about watching a Roman Catholic priest being forced to consecrate human excrement in the form of communion and give it to other prisoners. I mean, talked about forms of torture. Wurmbrand stood up before one of the Senate committees in the U.S. when he was testifying on this, took his shirt off, and showed him the nail holes in his body. From being tortured, and you know, somebody actually walked up and stuck their finger in one of the holes in his body, and Wurmbrand said that he literally had communists that were jeering and sneering at him and yelling, "We are the devil!" while he was being tortured. He said all the pains and tortures in Dante's Inferno are nothing compared to the tortures in communist prisons. So I mean, there was a special, unique, almost demonic hatred by communist ideology. The Catholic Church called it the satanic scourge of communism. The late Catholic priest Fulton Sheen called it the mystical body of the Antichrist. He said communism is of the serpent. So, I mean, this isn't just like socialism or progressivism, or even the horrid evil that Nazism was. With communism, there was a really direct, specifically, viciously anti-Christian, anti-religious element to it that pervaded it, that Reagan and John Paul II understood made it worse than really almost any other ideology out there.
Well, and it's alive and well. In North Korea, in Cuba,
right.
In Red China. I mean, it continues. And the Christians are always the object, which for those of us that are believers, we understand that this is a spiritual battle. And that's what Reagan and the,
right.
and Pope John Paul II also understood. Paul, I got you confused with the Pope.
Hey, you gave me half of his name. I'll take it. That's good.
We need to talk about one thing, because you tell a very interesting story about something that'll be foreign to the evangelical ear, but familiar to the Catholic ear, and that is the Secrets of Fatima. And I don't understand it, so I can't explain it. And you said that Reagan took an interest in this. Explain what that was all about, if you can.
Yeah, well, and I think a lot of evangelicals will know this. I recently did an interview with the 700 Club, and I said there that Pat Robertson and folks like him who lived through this era, they'll understand this. But Fatima was, this is certified in the Catholic Church. It is one of the very, very few cases where the Roman Catholic Church has officially authorized, as best as it can, an alleged apparition of Mary, the mother of Jesus. And as I tell people in the book, you don't have to believe this, but you have to understand it. It's crucial to understanding what happened with John Paul II and even with Reagan. But in these apparitions, the mother of Jesus gave several predictions, including the rise of Bolshevism and communism. This is back in 1917, May 13th, 1917. John Paul II was shot on the feast day of Our Lady of Fatima, May 13th, 1981. And among the predictions, the famous third secret of Fatima that pretty much anybody alive, especially anyone who was Catholic in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, had heard about this, it apparently allegedly predicted the attempted killing of a pope. And John Paul II read it for the first time after he was shot. It was sealed in a vault in the Vatican. And he read it privately in Gemelli Clinic, July 18th, 1981. He released it publicly, finally, in the year 2000, May 13th, 2000. And so he connected that to his shooting. So I tell people in the book, you need to know this to know how he thought, and you also need to know it because Reagan knew about it. Reagan was very interested in it. Reagan was very intrigued by it. I'm certain that they talked about it, although I don't have a transcript of that first meeting. I'm sure they talked about it. And Reagan knew about Fatima going back to, the 50s, when there was a major movie on it in Hollywood. His father was Catholic. His brother was Catholic. And Fatima was just a big part of the anti-communist movement, whether you were Catholic or not. So I include that in the book because, as I say, you have to at least know about this in order to understand another area where Reagan and John Paul II had a shared interest or bond.
So they finally do actually get together face-to-face, although I think they're obviously men in those positions can't spend a lot of time together physically. But they share their belief in God, their understanding of the fact that they nearly died, and they think that there is a grand plan, or what is it? What's the acronym that they used?
The divine plan.
And they agreed. And so they share their stories, and they both work together across the ocean to try to bring down communism, and they actually did do that. And in the process, it's interesting that a relationship that developed between them, between Ronald Reagan, the 40th president, and John Paul II. Can you describe that?
Yeah, well, they would meet together one-on-one five times between 1980 and 1990. One person told me, well, that's not a lot. No, that's a lot. I mean, try to get a pope and a president together, especially five times in 8 years. And they wanted to meet a lot more than that. And they had so much correspondence and letters and cables exchanged that I couldn't even count them, Sandy. In fact, I show one document in the book from February 1984 where John Paul II is trying to call Reagan all day. And I don't know what it's about because the document's redacted, and the files at the Vatican are sealed for 75 years on this.
Wow.
I don't know why. It's amazing how hushed up all of this is. But he had been trying to reach Reagan all day. He finally cabled him at almost midnight Rome time, trying to get in touch with him about something. I don't even know what it is. but they met a number of times. They really, if you look at people, they just Google the book, go to Amazon, and look at the picture of Reagan and John Paul II on the front. And the picture just captures the relationship. Reagan's speaking to him, and that picture, by the way, is Nancy Reagan's favorite. She said, Ronnie is speaking very earnestly, and the Pope is hunched over with his fingers by his mouth, and he's listening to him very carefully. And I love that picture, Sandy, because it really gets at the respect that they had for one another, how they were able to talk and think together. But, yeah, they had a lot of communication. Last time they met was September 1990 at Castle Gandolfo in Rome. And because of Reagan's Alzheimer's, more that than the Pope's Parkinson's, they were never able to get together again, which really saddened the Pope. And many, many times he sent message to Nancy Reagan that he was praying for Ronald Reagan, and that he was especially praying for her as she took care of her husband and dealt with his illness.
We are out of time, but you also point out that Reagan considered the Pope to be his best friend, right?
Yeah, it's a fascinating. People have to read more on that, but that is a really interesting choice of words, isn't it?
It really is. All right, in order to read more, and trust me, there's a lot more. A great book, A Pope and a President, written by Paul Kingor. And Paul, thank you so much. Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Sandy. Anytime.
All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.